Ryan Windhorst does a fabulous job covering the NBA for ESPN. Nice enough to spend a couple minutes with us. Brian, good to have you on. It's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
Hello, gentlemen.
Brian, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, can hear you good. It's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. I really appreciate you coming on. Brian, how are you?
I'm good, gentlemen.
Let's get right to it. DeMarcus Cousins deal, let's get your thoughts. The thought process out here from a lot of fans is a lot of them are okay with the deal. They felt that the Kings should have gotten back more in return, but I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, I know how you feel about it.
Right.
I honestly think the timing was strange. If the deals were getting worse, then I just would have waited it out. I don't want to feel rushed, and I really would have wanted to vet the whole market, even if that only meant until Thursday afternoon. I would have even preferred it to wait until June, because one of the things when you trade a star player at midseason, you hurt the draft pick every single day. Every single game that the Pelicans win from here on out hurts the draft pick that the Kings now have. And I just, for that reason alone, I think I would have waited until June, because I honestly know what Vlade said, and maybe that's the way he felt when he made the deal, that he thought it was going to get worse. I honestly just disagree with that. I think you'd have still been able to get a first-round pick, and at least you would have known what the pick number was and didn't have the guy working against you every single night.
Brian, it seems the narrative initially was, you know, this pick, this trade wasn't a good one. And it seems now that things are getting out, the narrative around the league is starting to begin that this trade is the best that Vlade could have done under the circumstances. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what they were offered. See, to me, this deal is so similar to the James Harden deal, because that deal was also perpetuated by a change in the CBA. That deal was also involved the complexity of an extension. That deal also, in my opinion, had very strange timing, and you wonder what would happen if you let it play out. We'll never know. And that deal also, you know, had the whole thing about, you know, what else were they offered? I mean, we really don't know what Oklahoma City could have gotten if they had just waited a little bit. Could they have gotten Bradley Beal? We don't know. To me, the trade was at a point where it was. I find it hard to believe that the offer could have gotten worse. But honestly, literally nobody knows. Vlade can say he would know, or Vivek can say they would know, but they don't know. I would have exhausted the situation a little bit further.
We're talking with Brian Windhorst, ESPN, right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Talk to me what your reaction was when the news came down with what the Lakers did with their front office and then a quick subsequent trade. Let's talk about Magic Johnson. Let's talk about the changing of the guard in L.A.
Well, I'm standing next to Staples Center right now, and I don't think the Lakers could have had a worse 4 years if it hadn't been a part owner who was in charge of basketball operations. If I had just presented you with the case, the three consecutive worst years in the history of the franchise on top of each other, followed by what looks like going to be another terrible year where you're not going to maybe be able to keep your draft pick, I think anybody who was in charge of that would have been fired. The only reason it lasted as long as it did is because his last name was Buss. So I agree with the change, and it was needed. Again, I don't completely understand the timing of it, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, Vlade, you know, lying. At the end of the day, Vlade isn't paid to tell the truth to the media. He's paid to do his job. It doesn't matter what the timing is. I think it could have been better, but whatever. Well, I'll say this, is that Magic Johnson, he's not going to get any advantage for being Magic Johnson in this job. It's really, really hard to be an NBA executive. It's funny to me that all these agents, it seems to me that the only worse job in basketball than NBA GM must be player agent, because all these agents want to be GMs. And it's not that the GM job is easy. And in fact, most of these agents take pay cuts to go to the GM job. The agent job just must be that bad. So Magic is going to need a lot more than his name and his thought process to be good at that job. And how is he going to do? How is Rob Pelinka going to do? I don't know. I do know that they're going to need to be really lucky here, because none of these guys they've drafted in the top 10 in the last 3 years, in my mind, are future superstars, and they're probably not going to get one in this year's draft because they're probably not going to keep their pick.
What is your take on Lou Williams to the Houston Rockets? What do you think he brings to that team going forward?
Well, Lou is the type of guy who can win you a playoff game because he might score 35 points. I do not – he's at this point, he's a journeyman. And I do not think he's a plus player in the playoffs because I think some of his antics, the way he scores, can be neutralized and officials don't buy it. And I will openly admit that I am biased because I covered the playoff series 2 years ago between the Raptors and the Wizards. And I went to Lou Williams' press conference when he won Sixth Man of the Year the day after Game 1, and everybody, he was celebrated. And he was so ineffective in that series, the Raptors got swept, that the Raptors didn't even make him an offer to keep the Sixth Man of the Year, which I think is relevant. And, you know, I think this is going to be his fourth team in, like, 14 in 3 years or 14 in 4 years. So I do think that, you know, there could be a moment where he could help you, and there's a value in that. But I also think that, you know, he's got some weaknesses that get exposed in the postseason.
We're talking with Brian Windhorst, ESPN. You said you're just standing outside the Staples Center, which gets me to the Clippers. And so is this going to be a year they pull the trigger? We understand Chris Paul may be back tomorrow ahead of schedule. Do you think we'll hear them making any type of move before the deadline tomorrow?
Grant, they might be able to do something, but they don't really have a lot of ammunition. They can't trade a first-round pick. There's first-round picks flying out there. One thing I'll tell you that I've learned in the last 2 days, everybody talks about how good this draft is. Nobody values the draft in the back end of it because all these late-round picks are getting traded. The Clippers don't have a first-round pick to trade. They can't trade one. I mean, way in the future, I guess they can. They don't have a second-round pick, I don't think, to trade. And the players that they have, they have subsequent value, like guys like Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford. They have so much money left on their contracts that it's not really attractive. So could they make a deal? Yeah, but I don't think they're going to do something that's going to change the face of the Western Conference.
Before I let you go, and there's something I wanted to get into, I want to go back to the deal with DeMarcus and New Orleans. There have been several reports, and I can't remember if you're one, so if not, please correct me on this, but that we're hearing several reports from some of your colleagues that cover the NBA on a national basis, and I've heard the same thing, that Dan Fagan was sabotaging some of the deals that Vlade was working on. Do you put any onus on that?
I sort of take issue with your word sabotaging. I mean, I think I'll just be straight. Dan Fagan was telling teams, don't trade for DeMarcus because he's not going to re-sign. Now, if you're an operative for the Kings, I guess you would use the word sabotaging. I would use that word as agenting. I would say that word as representing his player, because in this case, it was a $30 million move. I mean, I think Dan Fagan, you know, if Dan Fagan had headed off the trade, he would have done his job. I have no problem with Dan Fagan saying that. Do I believe that DeMarcus won't sign? No. I would have called his bluff, too. The problem is that there's now no incentive for DeMarcus to sign this summer. And so it's almost certainly could end up being a going into the last year of a contract sort of situation, which is going to bring stress to the Pelicans. But they paid the price that they paid made them comfortable with that stress. But I don't have a problem with Dan Fagan doing his job. You know, he was advocating for his client.
So basically they are giving up, I mean, not giving up, they didn't have a choice, but basically this is going to end up costing them $80 million, right? If they, assuming that the Kings would have kept DeMarcus and then signed him to an extension this summer.
No, it won't cost them that much.
Okay.
We don't know what the salary cap is going to be in 2018.
Fair enough.
We also don't know if the Pelicans are going to offer him 5 years. You know, one of the things is about DeMarcus that I think turned the Kings off was they don't think his conditioning is great, and they weren't sure they wanted to give him a 5-year contract at any price. But if everything remains equal and he signs with the Pelicans for 5 years and he's nice and happy, he's looking at losing about $30 million. And he's also extends the chance of there being an injury in that next year. If he had stayed in Sacramento, not only would he have gotten $30 million more, he would have gotten the $30 million more this summer. And so I think Dan Fagan, regardless of what you think, if I was DeMarcus Cousins, I would have wanted Dan Fagan to do the exact same thing.
All right, final thing on Dan Fagan, and then I know you're swamped. You got a trade deadline tomorrow, too. But should I read anything into it when in the past year, John Wall, DeAndre Jordan, and Dwight Howard fired Dan Fagan, or is that just doing business in the NBA and guys change agents all the time?
Yeah, I mean, Dan Fagan is one of the most successful agents in the NBA. He has, you know, taken clients from other people. And again, you could use the verb differently. And by the way, I haven't talked to Dan Fagan in like a year. I'm not defending him because I'm like his buddy or anything. I just try to have an objective view. Players hire and fire agents all the time. All the time. Are there people that like Dan Fagan? Yeah. Are there people that don't like him? Yeah. But, I have no problem with him operating as a businessman in this regard. And ultimately, his attempts didn't work. So DeMarcus is in New Orleans.
Great stuff, Brian. I know you're swamped. We really appreciate you coming on the show. It was great seeing you a couple of weeks ago in Sacramento. We'll see you down the road.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. That's Brian Windhorst of ESPN.